208. The Rock of Europe.
This is Kid Jensen welcoming you to another 208 special. Tonight, one of today's most influential and certainly illustrious music makers, David Bowie.
Let's spend the night together from David's recent Aladdin Sane album. Last Wednesday, I journeyed to the Chateau recording studios near Paris to talk to David.
Welcome back to Radio Luxembourg, David.
Thank you, Kid.
It's been a long time since we last talked, which was about the time of the LP, The Man Who Sold the World. A lot has happened to you since then. And on this Bowie special, I suppose the first and most obvious question would be, I guess, why the announcement, your recent announcement, that you were leaving the world of music? Was it that you felt you could go no further in what you were doing with music on stage as well?
I still not really thought it out too well. I knew I had to stop performing for a little while, at least. There's a lot of things that I've always wanted to do on stage, and I found that I wasn't fulfilling those particular needs at the moment. So I have to step back a little bit and have a look at what I was doing and see what adjustments can be made before I think of coming back on stage again.
Oh, I see. So it's not an announcement which would mean that you would leave music entirely, that it's just your on stage.
Just stage performances. I'm certainly staying with writing. In fact, I'm doing a lot more serious writing.
What specifically would you leave stage for, to go into other areas of entertainment?
I don't think that I would leave stage to go into other areas of media at all. It would be possible to do filming whilst I was on tour as well. Presumably I'm doing some filming. I've been offered two or three films.
Yeah?
I think I'll be doing at least one of them.
What sort of direction would these films be?
Not at all rock.
Yeah.
Not musical films. It's straight acting parts.
And what will happen to your band, Spiders and Wise, when you leave the stage?
It's very hard to say, really. I think Mick wants to do some things of his own, Mick Ronson.
Yeah.
I guess everybody would just stick around.
You'll still be a bit of a family, do you think, then? But
yeah, I mean, we're all over here. We're doing the next album. But after this, I don't really know what they want to do.
I'm going to play a track which a lot of people know you best for, which is, what, 3 years old now, 4 years old? The Space Oddity.
Yes. Maybe
just before we play, you can tell us what was in your head and when you wrote the song.
Oh, Lord, everything. I was involved in the arts laboratory down in Beckenham at the time. We were just being confronted by all these appearances on the space shot, and it was the way it was treated. The treatment seemed wrong at the time. It doesn't now, but at the time I was annoyed by the way the space shot was being treated, alongside kind of cornflakes. It was
like the media.
It was treated very lightly. Yes, I mean it was. What kind of reaction Columbus would have had, you know?
Yeah.
It was as big an event as that at the time. It wasn't being given that kind of grandeur treatment which it should have had.
Ground control to Major Tom.
How did you react
when you were performing?
And you performed an awful lot. Just recently, you did something like 63 performances in 49 days.
How did you react to criticism?
A lot of writers called your show contrived and even synthetic. In fact, one English paper recently,
who went to see you, and a journalist went to see you in America, described it as a synthetic boy phenomenon.
Is that the guy who's just formed his own band?
I don't know.
Yes, I think it is. Well, I'll come and see his show.
Okay. What was the reason? I know a lot of, getting back to the press, a lot of people, there was a stage where you were doing no interviews at all whatsoever, and a lot of people wanted to talk to you and get through to you, but what was the reason for the clampdown on the press? And once again, that you came in for criticism, not you, I don't think particularly, but perhaps your management, that nobody was allowed to talk to you, and it was very difficult to get through. Was it because you were going through things? thinking about where you were at the moment, what you were going to do, and you didn't want to be bothered, but...
Not questioning if you wanted to be bothered or not being bothered. I really didn't have very much else to say.
You know, I've done quite a lot of interviews. And,
yeah. There's so much of what artists can say. And it's, there's not much substance to it after a time.
Yeah.
Except for the writing. You know, the writing really... Really says a lot more than in the interviews, I think.
Did you find the bigger and bigger you became because after a year or so of being on the road, the superstardom was upon you? Did you find when you were writing, the pressures became a lot bigger that you found that you were writing for an audience that perhaps you had created?
No, I never had that problem. I've always been able to... I tried to give myself as much space as possible ever since I started. And I don't think it ever closed in around me. I always felt pretty free to write exactly what I wanted to write about.
I guess it would be fair to say that only David Bowie could successfully interpret a David Bowie sign. Did you ever consider doing any other people's music at all, or singing somebody?
Funny you should say that. The next album consists of nothing but other people's songs.
Really?
Mm.
Maybe we could talk about that now. You're here at the Chateau in just outside of Paris, and why did you choose this as a recording place?
I had a lot of good things told me about it by people like Elton John.
Elton told me.
Right.
It's a very good place. And Ken Scott, my co-producer, had worked here often with Elton and with other people, and he suggested that I give it a try, especially for this kind of record, which is very much a hard rock album.
Is there something you can tell us about the songs? You just mentioned that you're doing other people's.
I'm retracing my own past, really, and my own likes and preferences for music.
Yeah. Which would mean what, the early
60s? Early to mid 60s, really.
Yeah.
Very much the London sound, because we were at the height of the Liverpool sound in sweeping England and America. And there was a lot of material which really went unnoticed in those days, and that's the kind of stuff I wanted to put down.
You mean the singles that were released that perhaps didn't make the charts at one time like that?
Mm. Things like the early Yardbird things.
Right.
Even things that had some kind of nominal success, like See Emily Play.
Oh, the Freud, yeah.
We're doing a lot of very interesting tracks.
Great.
And all my favourites.
This will be... Actually, it's not, I was going to say, it's taking a different direction entirely from your past things, but I thought that Aladdin Sane was a lot earthier than perhaps Ziggy Stardust was. And...
Yes, it was. Yeah, but that had to happen. I mean, America does that to you. It hardens you up musically.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. Whereas Japan had the reverse effect. And the stuff I've written in Japan was a lot lighter.
We're going to talk about Japan in a minute. But firstly, I'd like to play another track, again from The Man Who Sold the World. This is called All the Madmen. Is there something you'd like to say about this before we play it?
Ooh, I can't really say much about All the Madmen. It's nothing very constructive. It was written such a long time ago. It wasn't any particular viewpoint. It wasn't my viewpoint on mental institutions or whatever you want to call them. It was just an observation on a person who had spent some time in one.
Yeah.
And I was writing on his behalf, really. He wanted to stay inside, really.
Thank you.
Day after day, they send my brains die underground.
I read when you came back from Japan, it was surprising actually, you mentioned to me before, you've never played Europe, but you played in England, America, and Japan, which is very odd. But on the way back from Japan, you went by rail to Russia, it was the Trans-Siberian Express.
Right, yeah.
Right. And I read somewhere that you said that you had learned a lot of things from being back east, and even on the trip that you had, you know, going across the train, that it maybe have opened your eyes a bit more to something like that.
Sure. It made me feel as though I didn't want to waste my time doing a continual show which lasted 24 hours. I mean, it was being on the road, you do freeze up somewhere and you start to forget what the rest of the world's like. And that's something that the Russian trip did a lot of things to me, that one.
Yeah.
I want to do a lot more traveling, I think.
Yeah?
Mm.
And you said when you were back there, you did some writing.
Mm. I did a lot of writing on Trans-Siberian. I'm not really sure whether it's songs. I made a lot of notes. This is a great passage of time, and the whole trip lasted about 14 days.